start our planning commission meeting Tuesday, August 25th, 2020, and welcome everybody to our meeting. And call a meeting to order and move to item number two, public comment. We'll start with time set aside for the public to express any of their thoughts. Well, if anyone has signed up, if anyone's here to address us, seeing none. Close item two, move on into item number three, which is. So recognize all five of us.
Yeah, so that would make Eric, you'd have to recognize him as a voting member because he's.
Yeah, we recognize Eric as our fifth voting member tonight, so all five were present. I don't believe anyone else. All right, we'll move to item number three, which is approval of minutes from our last meeting on June 30th. Any thoughts or comments, corrections to those minutes? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I move we approve the minutes of June 30th, 2025.
I second that.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, unanimous. We'll move on then to item number four, which is the public hearing portion on the preliminary plan approval for Lone Peak Lots mixed use project. Do we want to go ahead and have, I don't know if anyone's here, yes, on the project. Do we want to have staff present first, or? Okay, we'll hear from staff and then welcome anybody else who'd like to comment on that.
We can resolve the public's concerns. Okay, just going to pull up. So if you're not familiar with the property, it is directly behind Walmart's on the corner there around about 4600 West and Cedar Hills Drive. And unless you guys want to hear, it has been. So, all background, it's not going well. Yeah. Down A. This project is located right directly east of the Walmart there. So let me just pull up, I have my notes here on my computer as well, so I apologize if you're going to have to just bear with me and maybe get a chance to pull it out. The proposal, like we can pack it, includes a mixed-use subdivision, including 12 units, residential units, four of which are townhomes. It's the four lot 1234 there on the north side of the property. The other eight units are found in the second floor lots 5 and 6. Each one of these will be two commercial uses below and then two residential units up top. The uses for the commercial area are undetermined at this time. Each building will be finished on the outside and the apartments up above will be finished, but in order to give maximum flexibility to the initial occupants, where the developers are proposing to just leave a blank shell of the building as much as they can, not even putting in the floor so that they can move the pipe rings and where they can move to. Each building will be built to show, like I indicated, allow for maximum flexibility. Let's talk about the landscaping here. They've done a very good job on their landscaping plan as well. All parking aisles do show the imperial and locust trees as per code. All these points are making our as per our state code. All buildings have a malice crab species planted nearby. Buildings show on average at least one tree per 40 feet of the width of the building. 4600 north, right here, at least four trees are here. It's lined with 11 plane tree for our code. Landscaping enhances the open space, and you can see that you have basically four structures, even though there's more to them than that. There's one, two, and three, and you see that they've incorporated open space in between these buildings. The gaps between the buildings are so narrow, it's still about, let's say, about 20 feet. It's a pretty little distance, but they've incorporated landscaping into those open areas to enhance rather than to be just kind of neglected area between buildings. The trees along the public road are shown at least every 30 feet, and I don't take any exception to the list of species that they've used in their palette that we show in the packet. On signs for the project, the preliminary plans do not indicate a monument sign for the site at this time, and so if they're wanting to have one of those on site, they have to indicate that location. But the building and the elevations will need to be showing designated signage areas. Commercial space fronts onto adjacent streets for parking is screened back part of the city code, so you can see that with 4600 West here and Sea Coast Drive here, you can see that the buildings do shield or screen the parking, similar to the way that Lexington Heights does the mark to this building. On parking areas, like I mentioned, are screened with the buildings and landscaping. I feel like landscaping is serving to screen with dual purpose to draw enhance the open space, but also to help screen some of these areas from city parking. The site includes 40 parking stalls, not including the ADA, so it's 43, plus an inner 9x18 standard size for the front onto landscaped areas. So that is the first city code. The site assumes secondary parking between the commercial and even amongst the residential. So one thing I think that is critical to point out is that these four townhomes have garages, two-car garages, so they're not, and then you have actually parking in front of them, so this square here would be considered driveway access to these two townhomes and these two townhomes. So even though there's 43 parking stalls, it does not include the 8 internal to the garage nor the other 8 that can be found on the parking or on the driveways themselves. So while the site assumes shared parking between commercial and residential tenants among other users, it's difficult to determine what the number of stalls will be that's needed because we don't know what commercial users will be, right? And so that's something we're having to kind of grapple with a little bit of uncertainty there. But I think that the way to move forward with that is that you do have ratios of co-establishments in terms of X percentage or X parking stalls per 1,000 square feet for retail space and X parking stalls for, I think it's 4 per 1,000 square feet of retail space and 6 for office space. And then if their uses can be demonstrated to show that their peak times are offset, that's when you can really enhance the shared parking aspect of it. So as applications come in for occupancy of these commercial sites, the initial one will obviously have plenty of parking. It's the fourth one that comes in that we'll have to say, is there sufficient parking given the other three occupants to say this can come in? If not, there may be a reason to justify saying, you know, we don't have this here. So that's something to consider in this approval process. Deliveries will occur on site. There's an access point on 4600 West here, and there's also an access from the Walmart parking lot here. There is a shared agreement between Walmart and this original subdivision. This is part of the original Walmart subdivision, so they can access this point as well. The site, I don't believe, is big enough for big delivery vehicles. These gotta be box trucks, so you can see the normal residential delivery. Let's talk about the building parts. I don't have any preliminary renderings of that. Do you have those today?
No, we have our architect.
I'm sorry, because
I have a lot of emails from the and all that.
So, but
do you not have the original elevations?
We do have the originals. I can pull those up.
The line is nothing to shame.
Okay. I think the other concern is the elevations of the town. That's something we haven't seen. So I'll pull those up in just a second, but these buildings do have bay doors, and they are screened on the other side of what you would see from 4600 Sea Coast Drive. I think the Planning Commission, as we're reviewing this process, the items that are called out specifically in the code that need to be considered are post-building locations, the aesthetics of the building, noise control, lighting, and traffic. The dumpster enclosure is now up here in the corner, so the dump truck could theoretically haul straight in, dump, and move out. So I think that's a very probably easier spot to have. And there's not, just to keep in mind, there's not a home on the other side of this, there's a big retention pond, so it's got some space there. On the town homes, like I mentioned before, each town home will have a two-car garage, we're not utilizing it. We're not counting these stalls towards their parking needs. The site is limited to 8 units per acre, the site is 81.5 acres, so that's where we get 12 units of density, that's the RFC code. The minimum ground floor area, as called out by code, must be 50% commercial, so currently you have, and it's really difficult to see if my notes up here, so it's like, it's a bigger grid. But these two commercial pads are, these two are 4,800 square feet, and that's for commercial on the main floor, residential on the second floor. And then these townhomes are 1,500 square feet each, so you have a ratio of 9,600 to 6,000 square feet in terms of what the ground floor areas are for like these structures. And then open space. On the open space, they are currently at, they're required to be at 30%. Currently they're showing 33.5%. So I think that they've done a great job in incorporating open space. I've always felt like this parcel is probably going to be a very challenging parcel to develop, especially in terms of the city's requirement of open space. Because there's another provision that it's not just 30%, 70% of it has to be contiguous. So you do have a larger area of open space here that could be considered, you know, an area you could throw a picnic table if they, because this is going to be an HOA, really. You could throw a picnic table on there and a shade structure and have a nice little picnic area. So I want to commend them. They've done a great job in terms of looking at our code and kind of seeing the vision of what we want in the commercial zone to look like, really paying attention to the pieces. So one thing I know that the Dustin developer here is very concerned about is the final approvals. So at this point, we haven't received a full engineer set and showing what you know, the grading, the topo, the details. And then I understand that because there's some hesitancy, there's a big investment in terms of gambling on some project like this, that once you go towards a full civil route, you're really committed. And so they've held off on doing that. And I understand that we need to understand that's going to delay shovels in the ground, but that's a risk that they're going to take in terms of they're going to submit a full set after the city council gives their approval. So once they've shown that there's an appetite for this type of project, I think that's made, but they have a green light to move forward with more details. Those are all the points I want to make on this property. Are there any questions that I can answer from the planning commission?
What is that curb space adjacent to Lot 5?
Curb space adjacent to Lot 5?
Yeah, is that a retention pond?
Are you talking about this right here?
No. So Lot 5 is a building, so to the south.
That's right here?
No. Right below the building. Right in there.
Yes. So it's an existing retention case. So it's actually, if you go down there, the roundabout is surrounded by retention basins that pulls all the stormwater and lock up the streets. So this project is not incorporating into that stormwater basin. It's incorporating its own.
So that's why it's not on the landscape plan?
Correct.
Last time you talked to them about storm retention, is it all above grade or will it be more under?
I believe so. You haven't been in the chambers?
No, nothing. It will be in that section. According to the engineer, he's like, you've got to fit about 20% extra in that.
Yes, there's not a ton of hardscape areas on this project. Even if they wanted to, they could take this area and make it a big retention basin and still kind of count towards it in this space.
The question I had. We had talked last time about possibly introducing people being able to walk on a sidewalk and then sidewalk pass between the buildings, allowing pedestrian access.
Through this open space.
Yeah, one of the two. I'm not suggesting that it's a requirement. It sounded like a good suggestion. I don't see it incorporated in the current plan. Tell us who you are.
My name is Dustin Cover. I'll be working on this development. So, some of the communications through emails, one with the engineer. He added the sidewalk at the top, like at the top of lot five, how he flagged out that sidewalk. That was a miscommunication on him and up against the timelines. Yeah, it was, let's run the sidewalk connecting Redwood Drive to the back section, and that's what he sent back over. And it became, there's a few things that will change, namely, upon your guys' recommendation, but if you want that, we're considering probably doing some sort of pavers or something between about six, five and six rather than landscaping, just because we are hoping you'll get foot traffic, you know what I mean, and that would give them a hard access in between one rather than landscaping. So there's some changes along with up on the townhouses right now. It shows one shared driveway. We plan, having done some townhouses recently, we are going to separate those by about a 2-inch strip. Yeah, so. 2-foot strip with plans that, yeah, just a little. No, a 2-foot strip down the middle. So that way, like, if there's kids playing on one driveway, they at least know there's kind of assigned space and stuff like that. And those are some things we got to clean up when we go to it. A lot of our hesitation with this, this is a new product going in lots 5 and 6 and a full design on the townhouses. So our hesitation was to build a product that's very specific to what we're using here and pay the architectural fees and engineering fees that are called for, and then to find out that the city council has an issue with it or doesn't have something. And that's about a $100,000 investment. So we made some preliminary investments depending on your guys' response and the city council's response. We're fully ready to move forward. We realize we won't be back in a month. It'll take us a few months to wait for architectural, engineering, everything, plat overlays, all that. But we wanted to get to this primarily before we start spending. Right now it's $10,000, $15,000 if it falls apart now, rather than $200,000 here in a matter of being able to say, all right, we're good to go. So that's kind of the hesitation on getting everything else ready. We have had a survey, we have had soils tests. Those top of the lines are also the full survey. We do have that done. The engineer's like, well, this is what's required, but you know what I mean, the next steps are for him. And then he needs actual architectural plans to properly lay it out along with the condo overlay from the plot map and all that stuff. So if we kind of are hitting a point right now where it's all right, if the city, for you guys who have seen it before, I think last time we had a pretty positive response. If we go to the city council and they give it a positive response, we're ready to close on this on the 3rd of September. So, like, it's right there. And the second I have that answer, probably before city council next week, next Tuesday, it'll be the next day we'll buy it and the money will go. And then hopefully within 6 weeks, 7 weeks, we can have all the other items addressed, along with a few of those changes. Some of it, like the landscape, they do a good job. They studied the city code, came back and said, all right, we meet all your tree requirements. And we had asked them, that it was kind of hard, it was a quick email saying, hey, I need this in a week, and this is what it came back with. But kind of like the building, the lots between 5 and 6, we'll go ahead and clean that up and maybe design that. My business partner and I were thinking some pavers in there or something to kind of give it a, you know what I mean, in between the two commercial buildings and walking space, and then the separation of the driveways up in the townhouses, just so our main concern is something backing out on a shared driveway and the kid playing in the other one, and you know, you never know, but it's just a nice hedge line will help separate those issues. Any questions?
Yeah, other thoughts, questions, comments? So we've heard from the staff and from the developer, we should open the public hearing portion of this item. If there's anyone here that would like to speak, express any thoughts or concerns on this particular item? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing portion of this and open again to additional discussion and questions. Hearing none.
I'm not allowed to ask this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I'm not allowed to staff or not. Are you going to be okay financially to keep this all going if you buildings with no occupants of the commercial space?
There will be no commercial loans on it, there will be anything.
That's a relevant question that the code does require, and that's my question. Are you planning building all three units at the same time, or are you planning phasing it?
No, everything, our plan realistically, we're finishing up 40 townhouses up in Draper right now. That'll be done in December. We'll let the snow fly and settle, and then next March, this is our 2021 project.
So, the reason that is because if there is an intent to phase, then the phase would have to start with the commercial aspect, just in the way that our this is written. So these are the elevations that we saw previously. There is the grid that we want to see. The question was about we're rendering with these new mics, so bear with us. The question we wanted to see was, what did the townhomes look like? We haven't really seen those actually fleshed out. Which, I mean, I understand this is going to take. As I'm thinking about right now, we could give a preliminary approval condition upon adherence to the city health guidelines and building requirements of the SC1 zone. And it can be held up in the final, but it's not. Compliant. It's good feedback that you want in terms of approval. We've seen in other projects who require it, where others have possibly stumbled and things to look out for. This is a thought in terms of getting approvals.
I kind of like the design. I know it's not quite that good in the look, but
it'd be so. In all fairness, I have seen the front elevation of those. They haven't sent it to me yet. It'd be more of a row house, very Bostonian style house. So the garages are actually back. The front entrance is right there on Redwood Road. So it's more of a row house style front low or front walk up stoop layout. The pitch roof is something mostly that brings some height to the units, so they help coordinate better with the commercial aspect, but also still give them a different, rather than like a flat roof, give them something that differentiates it between the commercial and residential zones. I've seen them. My background, I've been building houses since 2002 in Utah County. I own about 1,500 houses. I enjoy architecture and houses. These ones should be pretty cool. They'll be a very good looking, unique product to North Utah.
Yeah, I mean, for what it's worth, I like the direction it's going. I like the differentiation between a commercial flat roof and a residential. I'm assuming the townhomes will be two story.
Probably.
The pitch roofs definitely give it more of a residential feel and I think this design could fit well within our community. I also appreciate that the residential is towards the residential and the commercial is towards the commercial. It makes a lot of sense to me. So, other questions?
Just as a maybe a thought for as just addresses, there's not a lot of colonial houses in our residential area. So transitioning from the commercial look into the residential, I think that's less necessary as long as it kind of matches a little bit. The
residential?
Yeah, the residential could be more residential than necessarily meeting all the commercial standards. As long as it's still brick and has the setbacks and has the height requirements on it. I think there could be a little artistry put in there.
And that's, I talked to the architect.
Are you talking about her?
Yeah,
John.
They asked a similar question, I always point to the code. I don't say, hey, take artistic liberties and really show us your depth of design. I always, the safe point for me is to say, look at the code, look at what's been approved. and you should pass judgment. It's really up to this body and city council to make those calls, how they want to do, but I told them that the safe bet would be to stick with the 28. If that's the way they are going, then I understand why.
Are there any questions or comments? So certainly I take a motion.
I move that we recommend preliminary site plan for Lone Peak Lodge mixed-use project located east of Walmart, approximately 4200 West Hill Drive, subject to maintaining our standard provisions.
Can we add a second condition? Just that, and also on civil engineers, or city engineers' approval of the civil engineer packet.
And also for city engineers' approval of
the civil engineer plans.
Of the civil engineer plan.
I understand that's not going to happen before the next meeting, but it's an intention that we do have.
We have a second.
I'll second then.
Any further comments, discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Motion passes. All right, thank you. So, we'll move on to item five. Review recommendation public hearing amendments to the city code related to conditional and permitted uses. NRSC 1 commercial zone. We'll start with staff and then we'll open up for a public comment.
I want to apologize that this is not something any of you have seen before. Normally, I like to come to this stuff with you, discuss it with you, and get feedback. But in this case, I felt like there was maybe a little bit of an issue that needed to be brushed. Some of you have been on the planning commission for a number of years, some of you are newer, but in 2014, 2015, we approved the Amsor subdivision, which is the Great Lakes Market piece of the Dollar Tree. And they've all been there, they haven't changed tendencies, but if you look at the easternmost building, there's two shells inside that building that have never been occupied. Right. As a staff, we got an application for occupancy on one of those buildings. However, it doesn't meet the requirements of the retail zone. So the question was raised, what's better, a shell of the building that sits dormant for years or an actual service to the community? And that's why we brought this up. Is there a way to adopt code that allows some flexibility for the Planning Commission and City Council to approve uses that may not be found in the underlying zone under certain circumstances? So the circumstances that we have are, I wanted to make it simple, but as narrow as I could, so this is, go with me on this. It says, in the event that an approved commercial building in the SC1 zone has been constructed but remains vacant for a period greater than 4 years from the time of receiving a certificate of occupancy, the City Council may grant a conditional use permit with the Planning Commission's recommendation to allow for uses not listed in the specific district. However, proposed use must be listed as either conditional or permitted use in an adjacent district. So this isn't a retail district. If you want to expand the palette where you can choose what types of uses in that retail subdistrict, you could say this building's been vacant for 4 years, and we get an application or something that's in the mixed uses of district for this building, then we have the leeway to approve that use. That's where we're going with this.
Tell us more about the application.
It's not an exciting application. It's really for an ATM bank location. I mean, it's nothing anybody's going to write to their grandmother about, but the quite begs the question of what was more beneficial to the community? An additional building or?
We already have an ATM or two or one plan and one there.
Yeah, and they still could.
So
what is an ATM? I don't understand.
It's really just an ATM. That's it. It's a shell that you walk in, and there's an ATM. That's it. It's not a teller, it's just an ATM room.
Branded by a bank that we would recognize?
Yes. A national chain.
So you're talking about the building between the Marcos and the...
Yeah, half of that.
Half of that.
Yes, there's still another shell that is yet to be occupied.
Okay.
What do we do with that? So another issue. Currently, we can't have to reattach to any of that.
No. It's just that we don't allow, if you look at the code, it doesn't allow for banks, credit unions, these types of things are only allowed, had they been priorly approved, year before. But I mean, with some, I mean, you can find a use that's in there. So there's like a data center code, a data center use in the mixed uses stretch, but it works. Around by each other. But that's what we're going for here.
And that's a conditional use?
Yeah. It would be a conditional use in this case.
So here's my concern.
Sure.
I generally agree that it shouldn't stay vacant if that possible. But the timing concerns me.
Timing?
Yeah, so say for example, you had Marcos go out of business and that space became vacant. And someone made an application for this exact same use, but they won't fall under the 4-year exception.
Sorry, say that again, the last part. Would they fall under the 4-year?
No, they would not, because it has just been occupied.
It's been occupied.
So that seems a little discriminatory to me. I'd rather see a system where you could just make an application, get a conditional use permit, regardless of how
long. I'm open to anything. I mean, this was just the path that we saw way forward. But to me, a vacant use that's been there for 5 years, and never has a city received an application. So it seems, I mean, we want to be business friendly. We really, really do. But we also can understand that there's certain constraints and restrictions on how we use it, right? When a building's big for 5 years and we get an application, it seems a little disingenuous to say that.
Oh, no.
And so this is an attempt, and there could be other ways to say, we're going to allow an application to proceed in this manner, whatever it is. And you can scrap everything that I've written here tonight and say, this is the way we prefer.
Yeah, I have no problem with facilitating this use.
Yeah.
I just don't like the 4-year vacant part of it.
Okay.
I'd rather just create a system where you have all these applications treated equally, regardless of whether it's been vacant or not.
Okay.
So that
find that. Yeah. I mean, you can. This is the time to pull out the rent pen and strike through what I've written and say, here's what it should be. This is what we're covering.
This is a police power thing, right? You can or can't have these uses here. Right? So
essentially, yes.
We're trying to say, detrimental types of businesses, no industrial types of businesses, anything else that's reasonable, like you could put in as a conditional use, though, right?
No. And I say no because when you say something is a conditional use, you're really saying that it's a permitted use with conditions. So if they wanted to come in and they, basically controlling for lighting, noise, noxious odors, and traffic, you can't say yeah, you can't say no. So if you say something is a conditional use, you're essentially saying it's permitted, but we may impose certain conditions upon you for being there. But that's not really the way our code is written. In fact, it's not the way our code is written at all. It's got, you've got three columns, and if you're either a C or a P, one of those columns, then you can move forward. And that's fine because the intent of that is to, reduce the impact as you approach the residential area and reserve your frontage for sales tax generating or service oriented businesses. I think that they've demonstrated that there's not a ton of demand for this stuff. So that's why you want to say, okay, what mechanisms can we follow that allow us to, grant some leeway. I went through that list a number of times saying, how can you, what use can this fall under? And there's not a good one. There's not a clean one that I felt like maybe we should do some staff and just move this forward. That's why we're here. So, say, where can we go with this?
So my question, how do we do what Jared is suggesting without just opening it up for anything that comes in? How do we limit, still limit, what we're going to permit even if we remove a four-year.
I grappled with this, and I couldn't land anywhere, because, you know, she's just treating everything as a conditional use, and you're saying it's open to everything.
Right.
And that's where I felt like, okay, well, maybe if there's a time period that it's been demonstrated that there's not a whole lot of demand for this building based on our current use column, then we open it up, we expand that to the next column from the adjacent use to say.
That's a big.
That was the mental process.
So we're actually we're expanding away from residential in this instance.
Right? In this case, you're the farthest, you're in the retail district, right?
Correct.
So it's
not a detriment to the residential community to make this change. But you are still limiting it in the sense that it's still, you're allowed to install uses in this district and just the next one over.
Yes.
That's essentially it.
So let's say that it was, but it also works the other way. So if you have a use that's adjacent to a residential zone and it's vacant, and someone comes in with an application, it could be the more intensive zone that's coming in with an application. It works both ways.
It doesn't have to.
You could write it that it doesn't, but the way it's currently written, it does that. So you could say that it only works to a less intensive zone.
That would be one thought I would have, just to protect
to that.
Our neighborhoods. So it doesn't go the other way.
Yeah. I see that.
So would this be a permitted use in an adjacent zone? This specific application?
I believe it is.
So what if you have, because say you can have a conditional use in this zone if it's a permitted use in an adjacent zone? Is that what you're describing?
I don't believe so. Because if we would treat any use, whether it was conditional or permitted, we would treat them all as conditional.
Well, if it's permitted in an adjacent zone, that's pretty broad. But if it becomes conditional in this zone, that narrows it down.
Yes. That's why I feel like everything should be based on conditions.
So let me ask another question then. What if it's a brand new development and if there's no time frame on it, haven't we just basically said you can...
You can be either one.
So without waiting anything. I'm saying you're not waiting anything. It's a brand new development.
Well, if there's no time period, then really the column system and the district system of establishment.
Well, that's why I'm asking, without a time period on it, do we lose the ability to say our first desire is to have only within what's already permitted or conditional within that zone? If there's no time period on it, someone from the next adjacent zone could come in perhaps and say, well, per this new rule, and without a time frame on it, I want to.
But
how do we stop that?
But we're only talking about the SC one zone. So we're only talking about three small areas.
And I'm not overly alarmed. It's more about how does it affect our current structure.
Well, that was my worry, is that if you open it up to say that there is no time period, then yes, I think you do start getting applications. And so this is what I think it opens up to. Is that you have, you get Schlegel and Taco Bell, it's open, and then they put in a new building, and then it becomes a dental office. Because there's not a time. And that's what I would be concerned about. Because I have been approached by doctors and dentists about, hey, I don't think we have the dental to resident ratios correctly when you go to dentists.
For the Amsworth building?
No, not the Amsworth building. In the adjacent to Taco Bell. I've been approached by multiple people about possibly putting a dental office there. What if it's small? The list goes on.
Can I be a problem with it?
Please do.
I think this is not going to be an issue in 2 years.
Likely.
And the reason I say this is because there's a new road going in. It's going to change everything about this piece of property. The traffic, who's interested in it, there's going to be a bunch of new residents, it up for us not to get the revenue, and it's inevitably going to come with this new jersey.
I feel a little differently. I don't see that there's going to be any use in this building that moves the dial in the city of revenue. So. The thing that really impacts ourselves is growth in the city.
I think that Harvey Boulevard and the changes that's going to bring potentially a better institution that'll be there for the swing and whatever.
So are you hoping to do this tonight?
I was.
So that these guys don't go away.
Yeah.
We've got some direction.
I mean, waiting out is.
I don't love
that strategy.
If we've got a lot on the line, okay, maybe we should reel it in and do something. Like, make an option for us to do this. There's only really two buildings or two lots of this apartment, right?
No, because if you can find every building that's in there,
it goes vacant.
It goes vacant. So
for 4 years, so.
Right, and so. Let's say that.
Well, they say previously occupied.
So, yeah, that's not even going to be needing the occupant.
So maybe there's not a time frame on it, but that gives us the option that the first tenant in there has to comply with current zoning. And it's only if that space becomes vacated that we then consider someone from the adjacent or the use from the adjacent zone.
So it has to be occupied.
But then I think there's a problem issue.
Well, that's true. That's a good point.
Well, you could take the opposite approach and say that while the initial tenant wasn't successful, there wasn't a demand or there was a desire for this type of use that meets our current code to be in that spot. Whereas if it's vacant, the question is do we have a broad use list?
Are we covered if we said either or? Previously occupied, or it's sat vacant for 4 years. So we're not saying it has to sit vacant for 4 years. Tenant moves in for our zoning code. 2 years later, they fail. We have the option to consider use from the existing.
Well, if we write
it
away, it's not going to be any law. We have to consider.
Right.
Well, that's true. Have you run across this? Anybody else in your?
The only real comment I have is that I like the idea of having the 5 years. I think 4 years is a lot. I think we can get around the 2 or 3. That would be my answer.
I don't have any issue with that. I think something else to consider, though, is the intended uses of the underlying zone. We always talk about, sales tax, but it's not just about sales tax. It's the last item that's actually listed is the 5 criteria. So to create commercial, city commercial center, to create a place conducive to community gathering, to provide a place for community, community services, to provide for mixed land uses, and to expand its sales tax base. So it's multi. That's there. It's not just about saying we've got to generate on sales tax. And even the way that the state looks at sales tax is always, you know, as a city, you always get a little nervous, you know, from July to March, and now they're going to tweak the formula on us. You know, there was 1 year, just 2 or 3 years ago there, they decided that, hey, every city is going to take 1% of their sales tax and send it to cities that have homeless shelters to help pay for public safety costs. I mean, sales tax is always on the table for a different allocation to cities or a different methodology. They even talk about the big push last year towards taxing services. You know, so that storage unit facility could go from not being taxed and just looking at it as a service-based option versus to, hey, this is now generating sales tax for the city. So it's a moving target too.
It seems like the other solution as concerns this specific application is just to add that to itself. And that's a narrow short-term fix.
We can do that too if you'd like. Scratch what I said and put it as a conditional use in that zone.
It's not a bad thought.
It's not a bad thought at all. And if that's the route you want to go, it's noticed properly to do so.
It seems to be the best of both worlds. We're not modifying our code to situation that opens us up for something undesirable down the road.
I really appreciate that thought process because when you bend, sometimes you open yourself up to things you don't want. And there's always a really creative person when it comes to reading our code out there waiting to make an application. Yeah. I don't mind that idea at all. That's very good.
How would we structure that?
I would just say that if you're going to make a motion, if you're comfortable making a motion tonight to say to not recommend to the City Council the proposed code, and rather to add.
Pull it up.
Can't do that. Rather to go ahead and land use code 6550 data processing services as a conditional use of the retail sub-district.
That is considered data processing services.
I ran it through the internet. That was their idea. Because it's not really a bank, you don't walk in, there's not a teller. But this is, if you go back and listen to the audio from when the City Council has ever, or the Planning Commission has ever discussed the land use tables and descriptions, I think you probably heard this, I remember downstairs in the basement, you can't create a list that's comprehensive of every application you're going to receive, and so that's why there has to be the ability to interpret the application in various ways.
So,
I would say to not recommend proposed code to the City Council, but rather recommend that the City Council add land use 6550 data processing services as a conditional use of the retail sub-district.
So moved.
Okay. Why not? So that's our motion.
I'll second.
Any further thoughts or discussion? Before we vote, we've noticed this is a public hearing, so I need to just acknowledge that and ask if there is anyone here from the public that would like to address this issue in particular. Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing portion. We have a motion on the table and a second. No further discussion or questions. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Yeah. Thanks, Chris. We'll then move on to item 6, which is a review and recommendation on amendments in the City Code Title 10, Chapter 5, related to the fences. And we'll hear from the staff.
Parks, trails, and certain major streets. Initially, back in January 28, 2020, staff presented a discussion for the present discussionary minor complaint. Mayor Lisa requested that staff address making changes to the language, particular requirement that was adjacent to parks, trails, and certain streets. This discussion included issues property owners have been restricted to a certain open style fence, where this portion of code only certain properties and they expressed a desire to fully enclose their properties. The other one is alterations to property owners have made to their original fencing to give them additional privacy. Safety and usage issues for both patrons using trails and property owners. I think we covered quite a bit of that in pictures and discussions on this. Then on February 25th, 2020, staff presented a meeting of fencing language and for direction and feedback. At that time, staff requested the ability for CUP permits to be an administrative decision as staff reviewed and identified any safety hazards or adverse effects to fencing, to a fence that would create to the surrounding properties. Proposed code included updated language for special fencing standards, CUP to be an administrative decision, fence material, height placement, and altering standards. Items addressed at the meeting were, again, the lack of privacy, the residents felt, the noise, and the safe, feeling safe in the backyards. Addressed to nuisance and safety concerns and frequency patrons were going to be having as park was being installed, and it was going to be even more impacted at that time. They talked about park code, CUP, administrative decision, and staff at that time focused specifically on five areas where segments of the trails were 130 feet or greater in segment and less than 30 feet in width. Again, photos and samples were set forth showing added retaining walls to the fence, double style fencing. They had firm dense shrubbery and trees, latticework, fabric screen, chicken wire on the inside of the fence. These items were presented and discussed. Concerns were made by the Planning Commission of what portions of the trail may look like an alley if these areas were allowed to have a solid fence. And then, and specifically, we're talking about the area from Harvey Boulevard up to Sunset Park. Safety was a concern at that meeting, but there was they additionally indicated that there was no mention of safety in the current fence code. And the intent of the code was to achieve coordinated appearance, and the original code was written for aesthetics and should not be turned into something that wasn't meant to be. A desire for aesthetics for fence included the continuous nature of the fence and a bill of openness should be maintained. On June 30th, 2020, staff presented code. We addressed double fencing, changed the verbiage from Board of Adjustment to Appeal Authority. Section F for the material option, color, we changed, added to a brown color, earth tones, decorative concrete. We prohibited spike spears on the top of rails and posts with exceptions to wrought iron and metal fencing. Updating this language to include closed and changed from the zoning administrator for approval. Chandler also indicated that identifying the safety hazard would be part of the CUP process. It should be an administrative section. M, we include language for security fencing for public facilities, so there was a height that they could include on that to be different. Then also fences on property lines, it indicates that fences should be on property lines. We wanted to clarify this to inside property lines, so they're not required to be on property lines. A lot of times property owners will receive requests to put them on inside or other places on their property. We just didn't want to live in them. Happy within that property line. We also wanted to clarify that it is the property owner's responsibility to locate property lines. The city does not have a certified surveyor on site in order to go out and check property lines on us, and we want to put this back in the property owner's responsibility to locate property lines. The other one was prohibit double fence along trail and some exceptions. Planning Commission at that time indicated that the intent of the code should be addressed, as well as safety issues for sections of fence relating to trail sections, again with the 130-foot length, 30-foot width. Commissioners request that we ask for outside professional opinion to come to the next planning commission to address possible safety issues and answer any questions. So Chandler has graciously asked Josh, Lieutenant Commissioner Central American Police Department, to come and address any safety concerns. We appreciate you all.
Can we
turn it over to you?
I make one clarifying statement which might help you. I think part of what you read there was that the section of the code is written as an aesthetic and not safety issue. And I think somebody added in there should be changed, and I never meant to imply that. All I mean to say is that we start off the discussion always with aesthetics, and it always turns to a safety discussion. And then I think we get confused then about what should our code address. And so, you know, tonight, and through conversations, we find out safety is not an issue at all, that the intent of the code is purely aesthetic, and our rules, whatever we decide to do, should be aesthetic in nature. If, however, I think you've been hearing from folks that safety is an issue for either the property owners or the people on the trail, you know, I think we've heard from both, then all I'm saying is that if we include that in the intent of this part of the code, it may help us modify the code in a way that supports the intent. In other words, acknowledge that safety is part of the issue here, even though it was originally written just as an aesthetic issue. And I think they carried it last time so correctly, I'm not really qualified to say safety is an issue or not, and that's why we're really glad we're here to talk to us about it. Josh, tell us who you are.
Yes, I'm Josh Christensen, lieutenant with the American Park Police Department. So I talked briefly with Chandler about this, kind of what some of your questions or concerns were, and maybe I'm just here as a resource if you've got questions, if you've got certain ideas or thoughts. I've got a little bit of training and background in credit prevention for environmental design, which covers topics regarding different principles such as natural surveillance, lighting, tree canopies, things like that. And so some of this may follow that. I don't know if we'll start with any specific questions.
I think one of the hardest questions we've seen is so we're talking about the trail and whether or not having a 6-foot a solid fence on both sides of the trail creates increased safety issues for users of the trail. I think we're talking about a scenario where somebody's jumped or bugged or something on the trail. Would the absence of a solid fence on both sides change that potential?
So I mentioned one principle of the crime prevention for environmental design, which is the natural surveillance. And that is just such that when you think of your own neighborhood, and if something's going on in your neighbor's front yard, are you able to see it? Are cars driving by able to see it? And if you want to deter it, because if you're thinking of that guy's point of view, you know, if I'm going to go do something bad, do I want to do it right out in the open, where everybody can see me, where it's lit up, or do I want to do it in some of the darkness, or in some alleyway, some alcove behind the business where I can't be seen? Obviously, the natural answer is if I'm a bad guy, I'm doing it in the cover of darkness and whatnot. So that the lighting, the ability to be seen by people, number one, acts as a deterrent. But number two, if that crime does occur, it also acts as a oftentimes a reporting mechanism. You know, is that at any given time, I may have 4 or 5 police officers in all of America, Fort and Cedar Hill. So obviously, I can't be everywhere at any given time. So we rely on the citizens to see things and be our eyes and ears and report that. And so we we limit that ability, the more we, you know, restrict that down to surveillance. Business owners, we recommend to them often to leave some lights on inside the business. So as not only police officers, but also the citizens who drive by, and they see somebody in there burglarizing the business at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, it's a business. Nobody should be there at 3 in the morning. They don't call and, you know, investigate further. Maybe prevent the crime from happening further or catch the bad guy or whatnot. So that's where kind of that natural surveillance principle comes from. In relation to the trail system, you know, it is a philosophy that you want to keep it as open as possible. You know, like a trail system such as ours here, it is difficult to do that. It's not like we're running down Cedar Hills Drive. I mean, we're going through some wooded areas, some uninhabited area. But it's also a balance as well. You know, so then you also have to look at who are we trying to protect? The safety of the people on the trail or the safety of the residents? I heard a story, I think it was brought up here in the previous meeting, a neighbor or a resident that had somebody jump the fence from the trail, pounding on the back door kind of thing, and that became a concern of that resident. Therefore, they wanted a full 6-foot fence and to have some privacy in their backyard. Natural surveillance is only one of many principles. Again, it's meant to prevent crime, but it's also something that can be a tool utilized to address crime. You know, we discussed how much crime we have on the trail. And obviously, we don't want to always wait for something to happen before we do something about it, but I tried to look into that a little bit. The way we track our reporting system is by address, so I couldn't just search the trail, because depending on where it was reported, anywhere through the city, it could be a different address. It was difficult for me to just physically search for it, so I asked around a lot to some of the officers, because off the top of my head, I couldn't think of any issues we have been having on our trail system. Next to some areas, or up by Canyon Road, the tunnels that goes down through the under Canyon Road by the golf course with graffiti and whatnot. Aside from that, we haven't had much that we could all think of. And so, I know this stretch of trail, the thought process of trying to keep it open for that natural surveillance and trying to address that through a fence ordinance is kind of defeated. The purpose is defeated by just planting shrubbery to completely cover that fence. So now you start looking at are there other principles that may help. So if we do have an issue that we're concerned about, maybe it's a lighting issue. Maybe it's something that we can address more through lighting than natural surveillance. You know, this is it's a hard balance that you guys are faced with. The residents, what they want, the privacy in their backyard, and yet also not creating an environment on the trail that makes people feel, even if we don't have an actual crime problem, when it comes to crime and community satisfaction, it's perception. And how safe do our community members in Cedar Hills feel? And of course, I believe that is the threshold very high, and we want to keep that there. You know, there's a lot of things that the police department we try to do to maintain that. Maybe we've stopped at one of your places before, but at night, oftentimes officers are knocking on doors at 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night to remind people their garage door was left open and just to shut it, because that's if I'm crying, when you show, hey, you've got a weed eater and lawnmower, or motorcycle sitting in there, I know I kind of rambled a little bit there, but I don't know if that helps.
Well,
some of those
thoughts.
So I'm the one that thinks it's okay to have a solid 6-foot fence all along the whole thing. Like you kind of mentioned, that there's ways around this visibility, you know, being able to observe what's going on, people planting trees, put barriers behind it, build berms, like all these other things that are pretty obvious, in fact. Like if you walk down the trail, you see the chicken wire, you see the extra slabs, you see, you know, the wall behind it, you see all these other things. Which, if it was an aesthetic, you know, I mean, most of those aren't blatant violations, some of them are, but get around it. Like, if there was a clear path for them to, you know, put the wall that they wanted, some of the aesthetics, although you're not going to see into their backyard, you know, that pretty backyard that adds to the ambiance of walking around, I don't think that it materially changes safety in most cases because it's already been done in another way. And that was my point. They're going to get around it one way or another. And I'd rather them get around it with a pretty solid wall than with, you know, a berm and retaining bricks and chicken wire and
that's what I think. If safety is a concern, having a fence ordinance that avoids that just for the purpose to allow that extra surveillance, it's almost going to be pointless just because they're defeated in other ways. This particular stretch also, because it is so long and straight, there is actually quite a bit of extra surveillance, as long as they're not flying by, but they can happen from Harvard Boulevard and looking over into there, versus having a band right before the road, you know, you can see quite a ways up there or not, but
and the extra 2 feet, I mean, you can still see from a second story from any of those houses down to the trail, and you know, there's some trees or something. I don't know that the extra 2 feet is going to make a material difference. For me, it doesn't, because I'm 6'5", but for some people, it
might. The rest of us, you can't see over the 6 foot fences.
That's what makes this decision. Other comments? Questions? We've talked this thing. Yeah. What I'm hearing is we're acknowledging, and our coach should acknowledge that safety is also an issue on this trail. It's not just an aesthetic issue. It's a safety issue as well, and it may be that the intent should acknowledge that, or we have the section that says intent, where it's right now only the process of studies. But then why aren't there requirements in terms of competing rights? I mean, the argument can be made with folks who purchase homes along the trails, so that that's what they're doing, and not that they have to comply with the local codes. I think there's also the law, if you will, of unintended consequences, where maybe you go in feeling that way and learn over time, and we're learning as a city that our code may not address all the possibilities of that juncture between private living and public after. That's why we're here talking about changing it to address it.
I think we probably also have to remember that the safety issue is probably a force. And I think that the residents along there are having more concerns than the people walking there.
And there's more activity in that area. I mean, right. People, maybe just happens as you develop things.
Yeah.
You get busier, right? And so, if it hadn't been for kind of 2 months ago and all the craziness of people walking in the gated communities and being on the national news and all of that stuff, you know, the increase of traffic because of the park and all these things, like, it may not have been a bigger. And then we have the story of a person from the trail who jumped into the backyard or somebody else, you know, a dog can jump a 4-foot fence, a dog could probably jump a 6-foot fence too, but
it's a little harder to jump a 6-foot fence for a dog or a person. Like, that's my thought. You know, people aren't going to be just jumping over the fence to go knock on the door or bother you or as much. Maybe they will, but, you know, it takes a little more effort to jump 6 feet.
Need some options. Well, I don't want to keep you longer.
I mean, you're good.
I mean, some options. If we were to go down the road of allowing the fencing to be installed, we'd be looking for other ways of getting a safety issue. Lighting would probably be able to cheat them on that. And then talking about how to get lighting, and we're talking about low lighting so it's not bothering the residences.
And would that be, you know, lighting within the dusk and dawn hours? Would it be 24-hour lighting? Would it be, you know, like, what kind of, because we technically, these parks are closed after dark, right?
Yeah. At 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock. So after 10 o'clock, you shouldn't be in the park. Not saying it happened, you probably shouldn't be. So, I mean, and that's another way, too, to help kind of control traffic, is to make it inviting up until the curfew hours, and then after that, turn off the light so that people aren't drawn to the lit area to go hang out.
We try that.
Would that make it easier for the police to just know that if there's anybody in there after 10 o'clock, then suspect?
And they already know that. You know, those trails are often in control, especially at night, in our car. I mean, I personally drove that trail in my car dozens and dozens and dozens of times in the middle of the night. Because again, nobody should be out there, it's not supposed to be. And it's either just not being in control because we're lazy cops just like the donuts, or I'm going to drive my car out there at 3 in the morning just to, you know, and so, same thing with businesses that, you know, car lots that close the gate. The idea behind that is somebody wants to come in and steal a car, or, you know, it keeps them from going in, but it also keeps the patrols from happening because, you know, we do get out and we put patrols and whatnot all the time in parks and especially places we know we have issues, but oftentimes you're trying to cover dozens and dozens of square miles in a certain hour of shift and whatnot. So again, everything counts as double-edged. You know, the lighting, you're going to get that. We've seen that in our other parks. The lights are on, people are still going to be there. As soon as they turn them on, they start to leave. But that also now makes that actual surveillance more difficult. So whether it's the neighbors, whether it's the police, when they're seeing something going on in there, you just don't see it. Same with the trails. And so again, it's a balance. You know, we recently with, you know, it's kind of an analogy, you know, you think of, as we discuss the safety of, you know, front office personnel, say at City Hall. The safest way, best way to keep that front office staff safe is bulletproof glass all the way around the whole place. But now you've got to balance the customer service and the feel and the letting community feel like they're safe versus total safety of the staff. And so everything we do is a balance. And that's where you guys come in, is trying to stop that where you want the balance to be.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much. Thank you for all you do for us.
Good luck in your
appreciate
decisions.
Thanks. Thanks so much.
Appreciate Jessica coming tonight. So let's go back to your concerns with the addressing the safety issues for them. We want to include that in the intent for safety. Besides those two categories, trying to scribble a couple of things down. So the intent is that the intent of the subsection to establish certain standards for the construction of fences adjacent to public parks, public trail corridors, and certain major traffic arteries that are highly visible to the public for the purpose of achieving a coordinated appearance and safety, additional safety to the surrounding properties and increased using trail. FAMSOs should be consistent to the quality and design and construction of such facilities, surrounding facilities.
So what word are you at? Is that an official reason?
That's just my thoughts.
Yes.
F1. Just read your F1.
I mean, it is a little bit wordy, but we can.
So, as I'm looking over the proposed change, we did a little bit of material, spikes, but we're still saying that on the specific segments, 130 feet or more, less than 30 feet wide, you don't have a closed fence. That's the way it reads.
Over 4 feet. So you have an open fence.
Yeah, an open fence is six, close to this four or more. So, from a property owner's point of view, if you want to have a trampoline or a swimming pool, even if it's 6 foot, if it's open, that still presents an insurance problem. Because that's an attractive nuisance, and it's not hidden from the, somebody walking through it.
But on a swimming pool, it doesn't need to be hidden. It just needs to be gated and latched, and it can be 6 feet open.
My insurance company.
Oh, you're okay. All right. I will not speak for your insurance company. Okay. I have not heard that because that's a requirement above and beyond building code.
This was like 18 years ago.
Okay.
So with they do have to follow the fencing regulations, which are state regulated part of the building code. It's usually 4-inch spheres between fencing. It does have to have self-closing, self-latching gates. And so I don't think it calls out that it has a gate as solid. So that may be specific to your insurance.
And yes, from years ago when
So it seems to me, I don't know, we can go back and address all the other items we've already addressed and suggested changes to, because I think we have a pretty good consensus on but what you haven't read, essentially. We've talked through a lot of that in the past meetings. The only item remaining in my mind, and certainly take the questions and thoughts on this, confirming the intent, which you just read to us, and I think that's our right to earn. And I say that he's part of that. And then what John just mentioned, altering the part of this, adding more a close fencing on taller than 4 feet to allow close fencing up to 6 feet. And then I think the color of material and everything we've already addressed for that.
Okay, the way it's written now is between 4 and 6, it has to be the whole thing.
Right, on that, I'm saying that's. Those two things are what remain to change to address, in particular, the property owner's concerns. I think it's. You tell me if I'm wrong, but I don't know if we've heard safety complaints from people on the pathways.
Walking the
path? Yeah.
The patrons using the trail.
Yeah.
Personally, I have not.
I've heard complaints. We get a lot of complaints about loose animals.
Okay.
Which eventually would actually address a lot better.
Maybe.
Well,
it depends on if it's their animals. If it's the people walking, it not really. So
yeah.
Part of the problem, yes. Part of the problem, no.
Okay.
But a 4 or 6 foot fence isn't going to address whether you've got pets on a leash or not.
That would
be a walking trip. So I
subsequently get complaints from people on the back way down, if they're walking down a 6 foot high elevator.
Because you want them to be in that.
Yeah, I mean, that's, that was my point. They're doing it whether we want them to or not. And so to improve the aesthetics, allow them to put a better fence up, a higher, less see-through fence, and that way it won't look like there's four different types of fencing that are covered up.
So if we were to rewrite the code to allow that, we've acknowledged that safety is an issue along those pathways. Do we then have to also offer up some way to mitigate that safety issue by lighting or some other way? I know that's money, and you know, I don't want to spend the city's money.
Neither do I.
So I respect that, but I wonder if we don't, if we know that we're creating a situation that could have a safety component to it, do we have an obligation to also come forward with some kind of mitigating safety issue?
Well, I mean, let me ask you, because my impression was like, was there a safety issue that was brought up? Like, we recognize that limited visibility creates more of a safety issue, but in walking the trails, there already is limited visibility. And with that limited visibility, there have not been many, I want to say any, real safety issues that have resulted as a stemming from, you know, closed off fencing. I would say that any safety issues we've experienced, sorry, Colleen, my mic's not even on. Any safety issue that we've experienced is not the result of a fencing discrepancy. It's the result of something else. So, just something to consider.
Okay, go back to the intent. Here's my thoughts. Going back to the intent of the call. If you want to maintain that, and the type of fencing, say, in the 130 feet length, if we take out a 6 foot fence open, allow for the 6 foot closed fence, but maintain a white line on the fence.
I'll go on record now. I really thought about this. I'm fine with the 6 foot. I don't know that the code is going to change a whole lot in the way. I don't know if it makes it more safe than less safe, but I do know that the code is more visually appealing than it was. And it's 6 foot, it's still a 6 foot fence. Go ahead, please. I see your disagreement with the liberal or.
I mean, there's a brand new masonry wall around the development down here. Brand new, super nice, aesthetically at least more so than I think the vinyl fence is along the trail. And it's masonry, and it's solid. There's no see through there. Like I don't see that there's an argument to require permeability. I just don't see the argument. Like if you can visually see over the from your second story window people on the trail, great. You can't now. Through the edges and the berms and you know.
Can I add in
the chicken wire? I just don't see that there's necessarily an advantage, and it sounds like there is a strong desire for people to have a solid fence.
Let me throw this in because I agree with you. Even areas that we're not really under. That are not really under consideration, along Forest Creek. A lot of those homes don't have fencing. There's also no lighting back there. And it's just as much of a problem. It's probably more dangerous because it's so much more secluded than the area we're talking about tonight, from Sunset to Harvey. I mean, this doesn't even fall under the purview of this code, but it's a much more probably problematic area given its topography, lack of lighting, lack of visibility into it. I mean, you can only see it from that person's backyard. You can't see it from up above on Pinion and looking down. It's almost impossible. It's too thick. It's too dense.
So with the two opinions I heard, this is why I wanted the intent clarified. From an aesthetic standpoint, the code as currently written is more favorable for aesthetics. But we acknowledge in our intent that safety is an issue, in particular for the property owners who abut trail system, and we don't think that we're threatening the safety of individuals on the trail, that it seems reasonable to alter the code to allow for a closed fence up to 6 feet.
So it's not probably
taking safety into account.
I'm probably taking issue with that last part, Jeff, that there isn't a safety issue for the pedestrians. I probably should ask the police officer this one too, but one thing that no one is talking about is escapability. Escapability. Absolutely. If you're being attacked on your trail, we got a 6 foot solid fence on both sides, what are you going to do?
If we're allowing up to a 6 foot permeable fence,
what would you change that?
You can't get through the slats.
Yeah.
You can't climb the slats.
You could break through the vinyl. But the 4 foot you're over, or if it's a hedge, you're through. Or if it's no fence, you're through. So I just want to go on the record saying I disagree that there's no issue for the pedestrian.
So I kind of want to talk about how many homes this portion of the public gets. So on 4th Street Trail to Sunset Park, 13 homes are affected. Sandalwood Oak Road, there's 2 homes. Junction Lane and Cotton Drive, 4 homes. And then 4600 West to South Access Road on the trail, there is 3 homes that this work at. So all in total is 20 homes that this specific home would affect.
I realize this is anecdotal, and I listen to your point, Jared. I talked to my daughter, and she walks the trail frequently. Our path we walk. And she feels more safe in the tunnel than in the area approaching it. Because when you go through that segment, you can see there aren't trees and bushes and things where a potential assailant can be hiding. She says that's the part where she knows what she's got. There's a street at the end, and she knows where she's coming from. The segment before that one coming, there's trees, there's bushes, there's she looks like people could be hiding, and she's had dogs behind the 4 foot fence to rush the fence barking and being protected with their property. So from her standpoint, she feels better on that segment.
Yeah, I mean there's no question.
She's not walking it after dog.
We're talking worst case scenarios obviously. And
sure.
Probabilities or whatever, but
so this is from what I'm hearing, Charlie, we're pretty much just discussing whether or not it can be closed from the Board of Secretary.
I hate the idea that we're possibly increasing a safety issue, creating a safety issue for people on the path. That's where I'm at for. My daughter walks the path too, and my wife is going along with that. And they'll walk as late as 10 or 11 o'clock at night. Cooler air, nobody's out. They enjoy their quiet time. I would hate that we would change something and then something happens. So I don't know. And I respect extremely property owners' rights and their concerns as well. Because we have this juxtaposition of a very public thing right up next to very private residences.
So, as it's written, we're not changing that portion of the code. We that portion of the way it is. Address the intent with safety concerns, include that in, and then address double style fencing to prohibit future ones to go up, put the retaining walls behind those fences.
So what you're saying is one option is leave me alone.
Right.
We've addressed everything else in here, and that's the intent to address safety. I don't know that we've yet addressed the complaints from the property owners, but maybe we're not finding a way forward to address their complaints without increasing possibility of a safety problem along the path. And then we make a recommendation based on what we have currently in here and to adopt this code and then, you know, see what city council do. And that's an option. I don't want to punt. I don't want to be responsive to our community. I think we all do, but safety is becoming an increasing condition. It's not like it's decreasing in importance. It's actually increasing in importance.
In reading the section of code you've given me, the very first paragraph addresses safety. Right?
Under fences.
Fences, 10, 5, 18 fences. It is the intent of this section to establish minimum standards for placement and height of fences for the purpose of facilitating safety of pedestrians and motor vehicle users in connection with ingress and egress, private drives, and parking areas to more adequately protect the health, safety, and general welfare of the population.
Right. Right. Relative to fences. And then there's a subsection that addresses.
Then the subsection F.
Which only addresses the steps, wanting those narrow parts of the pathways to still be viewed. I think that was the initial intent.
Would you like to see safety verbiage put in under that paragraph?
In my opinion, I think we have to acknowledge this.
I thought it included it's all under 1018. I thought that was comprehensive all, but I could be wrong.
No, I appreciate what you're saying. My reading of 10518A is talking about making sure that fences don't obstruct safe movement of vehicles around corners. And off and on, you know, pedestrians passing on to and off of pathways, and doesn't, and it seems, because it's so wordy, it seems to be addressing specifically those things. And I'm suggesting that the subsection ought to also acknowledge that we do have a safety issue.
Yeah. On this. I think Jane proposed language to that effect.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, when that comment does come in, one of the things we do address is a provision area for on the corner. We want to make sure to keep that open. We will address the driveway safe area where it has to be 12 feet away from the driveway. So looking at this, when we look at a general categorized safety, those, I tend to lean towards that more as a safety issue than on a trail.
And I want to go for it. I know you guys see that, but this subsection F is particularly about on trails, and we don't mention safety. So,
So, enough discussion, perhaps. So, I'll entertain a motion if anyone has a motion they would like to put forward. Even the table, if that's what we still need to do. I wonder if we're going to come to any more of a conclusion on the 6 foot curb versus the 4 foot a month from now. Yeah. I'm kind of thinking we are where we are, and with some disagreement with them, I acknowledge that.
Do you want me to reread inclusion of the safety into content?
If it's any different than what you read before, I think it's fine.
Can I share something? I'm looking at, this is from the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission, talking about pool barriers. So it's not exactly related. Well, one of the things that they mentioned is making sure that these barriers that are around pools, which I could also see around backyards and something, don't have places to climb, get a foothold, be able to put your hands and feet through for children, be able to access it, because for solid barriers, there shouldn't be any indentation to protrusions other than normal construction elements in the masonry going. So if we're looking at keeping people out of a homeowner's yard in some way, these permeable fences are much more attractive for somebody to climb on and jump over than a solid fence would be. There's more opportunity to do that on these. And so, I mean, if there's a, again, I don't see the material difference between a 4-foot and a 6-foot fence. If we're going to, for aesthetics, for any, you know, so sorry, I think the permeable fences are, you know, to your point, Jared, of somebody being able to bust through one if they needed to, like, sure, I guess, but if even if you built a vinyl fence really well, that's kind of hard to do. I'm differing in opinion, but I think a solid 6-foot fence is perfectly acceptable. And along these trails, if we want to put in lighting at the end of them, like, you know, something pretty that says there's a light here, there's an entrance to the trail for these areas that are of concern, okay, cool. But other than that, I you know, right now what they're doing is circumventing the code, and if we can update the code to make it more amenable for them to do something that's aesthetically pleasing that kind of meets this privacy requirement for them, I think that would be best for the homeowners. And I don't know that it's going to affect the safety of the pedestrians. Because I don't think everybody's going to replace their fence. I just think the few that are problems that haven't been allowed to update their fences.
Any other comments? Motion?
Can I just say something real quick?
Sure.
So, I may have missed something clear over here back forward, but four-foot fences, I think the feeling I'm getting from some of us is they allow for that enjoyment of surrounding the backyard. But they still give some type of barrier, even like they're a burglar or something, that you're not going to with ease, you know, trespass, for lack of a better term. And I can see Steve's point too, that it's not built for privacy, but it does serve a purpose. So I don't know. We can keep putting it off and putting it off, but I think we should come to some kind of consensus on it. That's just my thought.
Thank you. Can the chair make a motion? Yeah, against the rules.
You're a voting member. I don't know why not, but I haven't seen a rule that says you can't.
I'd like to put a motion on the table and then we can discuss it. I move that we recommend the proposed amendments to the Cedars Municipal Code as outlined tonight by staff in Section F, special provisions relating to fences adjacent to public parks, trails, and certain major streets, subject to the following modification, and that is the modification that was written to the record earlier, modification of the intent of subsection F to acknowledge that we feel there is a safety issue along these more constricted parts of the pathway as you were earlier. That's my motion.
I'll second.
Motion table.
made and seconded. Further discussion, there's a motion on the table.
My discussion would be on the one, I appreciate what I'm about to say. I'm concerned about the six, like, Fulton versus Florida. I'm perfectly willing to accept the proposal. And then I am strongly persuaded that the plan is made to close. But the 20 homes that we're talking about, this is 10 for the one, three. Maybe five in the next 10 years. I don't see the substantial difference that we've got there. And for the two or three homeowners that are highly concerned about it, it's them, an option.
Further discussion, I mean, no.
On the safety issue, I don't know that it, sure, I guess it addresses the intent of safety, which the fencing ordinance does already, but is there some kind of standard of safety? Like, we don't have any active complaints, we don't have any police reports on things happening one way or another. Like, so I don't know that it changes anything by saying that safety is an issue. Like, I don't, other than that, more closely regulate, but we may argue in both ways that a taller, more solid fence increases safety for the homeowners. But we've also said the opposite too, that taller, more solid fence increases risk for pedestrians. So I'm not sure which standard we're trying to establish with that, or if it's just making it more complicated.
Your height and your step. So one of the things that we have to take into consideration is the multiple calls that I get with residents of certain communities. That's what we do have to take into consideration.
So we've gotten homeowner calls that they are concerned that the pedestrians are a risk to their property.
And they have indicated that trespassing and dogs coming in and dedicating them to the property, and there's multiple
Yes, but so that's my question. Because I think that your concern is pedestrians and my concern is homeowners, and we're approaching this from kind of two different angles. And that intent is important. Which one are we addressing? And it sounds like we have active complaints on the homeowner side, but not the pedestrian side. And so we need to potentially address no ones with active complaints, but not really hobble ourselves from the pedestrian side. If that became an issue, like we conjectured that might become an issue as we change this, but right now we have actively homeowner property owner issues.
Okay, but if I provide the safety, as you had indicated before, the verbiage before, that's not differentiated between the two. So if our safety concerns are coming in high to the homeowner, then those arguably carry more weight than for the
homeowner. So the arguments that we've made, though, is that for the homeowner, a higher, more solid fence is better.
Yeah.
For the pedestrian, it's not a better thing. Although it does prevent trespassing in those kinds of things, it would, you know, make it harder for them to knock on the door to get help or to be seen by someone nearby. So we have essentially opposing views here about safety. One which we have active complaints on, one which conjecturing could happen if we allow this change to occur. So I love that we're thinking about safety intent, but the only active issue that we have is homeowner property protection and safety, because there's been complaints and potentially police reports or whatever else. We haven't got any of that from the pedestrian side, which makes me lean towards this all of them.
Well, I think that's why I made my police officer come in. Because you're right, we don't have those active complaints, and it is conjecture on our part that we could be creating an unsafe condition. In my mind, the police officer tonight kind of confirmed for me that we could very well be creating an unsafe condition. At
it's a less safe condition by allowing closed fencing all the way up to 6 feet. I will tell you that there's, in my opinion, huge difference between a 6 foot and 4 foot fence. My neighbor put up a 6 foot fence around his yard. Now, when it used to be open, I begged him to put a 4 foot fence in, but he was determined to put that 6 foot black wrought iron fence in. It dramatically changes your perception of space versus a 4 foot, which I can walk up to, look over, and talk to somebody or whatever. That's just my opinion, for what it's worth. So I appreciate the comments, Eric.
Oh yeah, I was going to say, if there's some agreement on closed versus open, whether it's 4 or 6.
So it's closed up to 4 feet, open above to a maximum height of 6 feet.
That's what
it is. That's
what it is. We at one point had a split fence where it was 4 foot of solid fence with the wrought iron on top, right? And that was all open.
That's right, and that's still open.
And it's still open. So that would mean maybe at least some trespassing of animal.
There's going to be a lot of trespassing.
I think that's a substantial question. Any other questions? If not, let's take a roll. All those in favor of the motion on the table, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
So I need to you to say who voted
so
which way.
I was on the floor. So we have the motion. So the motion was to recommend the city council the code as it's been written, which does not allow 6 foot closed fencing, but it adds safety as an issue to that subsection. So that motion was put on the table so that we could get these changes made to the code, and we'll second it. And I think only one or two of us voted in favor. I voted in favor. Am I the only one?
Do we need to do a roll call?
Yeah, there's no problem.
Okay. So, Hunter?
Nay.
Nay.
Steve?
Nay.
Eric?
That's a call. I'll be with you.
Yay!
And I'm getting it just yet. So the motion is defeated. And I guess that's where we leave it for tonight.
I can make an alternative motion. I don't have to go anywhere. I recommend the proposed change with the exception of the change to FB. So my motion would be to leave FB the way it is. Except the other changes.
That was my motion.
That was your motion?
Yeah. I'm not going. I'm saying let's take it as is with no changes to the.
I apologize. I missed that.
The only change would be to the intent, which we read in earlier. So it leaves it as a 4 foot closed and then open above 4 feet to maximum height of 6 feet, which is what you're
correct. I would be okay on that motion.
So that swings it from 3-2, the motion carries, to recommend
can
the city
council. Can we redo the vote then?
Sure,
can
we do that?
Let's redo a motion and redo the vote to be very clear.
So I reissue my motion, or unless you want to read it.
Do you want to read your motion specifically to avoid any confusion?
My motion would be to accept the changes with the exception of the change to F3B. So my motion is that F3B remain the same as currently
proposed.
No, it's currently proposed.
That is proposed. That's proposed.
No, there's a proposed change to me that I'm against. Because
no closed path?
No. So the red line on B that I have a problem with is that a 6 foot privacy fence may be permissible upon the approval of the zoning administrator. That is not currently an option.
Maybe constructed at a home.
Are we looking at different versions?
We may be looking at different versions. The one that was in my packet, it's in my hard copy packet, I'll just read it to you. So it says type, where trail segments are greater than 130 feet in length and less than 30 feet in length, no closed fence or gravel trail segment shall be constructed or maintained at a height greater than 4 feet. However, an open fence may be constructed at a height no greater than 6 feet. When the trail segment is adjacent to a major street corridor, according to parkway fence overlay map, fence standards as specified elsewhere in this section apply with zoning administrative approval.
So I'm okay with that language, but the version I'm looking at has that stricter.
I wonder if what was posted to Dropbox.
Well, what was stricter was planning commission and zoning administrative was
put in. But he's looking at a copy that reads differently than that.
It's got everything that you just read stricter.
But this is the actual code that we're working with. This is an alternate.
So not it's not clear to me reading this if I were applying for a permit that I could put a solid fence with a permeable second piece that's two more feet above it. That's not clear to me. It says that either I can put a permeable fence or a solid fence. It doesn't say you can do a hybrid fence where you've got 4 feet of solid and 2 feet of permeable. To me, it doesn't say that.
And in for this section and the type of fence in that section, you wouldn't allow to be able to.
So it wouldn't allow. I thought we just said it would.
Yeah, I think I'm going to make this book.
Okay.
I don't have a problem.
Can I?
Yeah, Chad.
I'm trying to keep up with you guys. This has been very confusing. Would it be beneficial? And there's, I hate to do this, but there's not a rush on this. So I really would hate to do this improperly and send something to the council that was not the intent of the city of the planning commission. I think it'd be beneficial to just the majority vote, explain to Jenny what you're looking for in the code, and we will bring it back.
I think I'm only confused that part. I think I didn't really use that. Is it the wrong word?
Okay.
Are we clear then?
I think we're clear.
Okay.
But
it still doesn't allow the 4 foot 2 foot open as currently written.
That is true. That would be a further modification to consider.
I would be more okay with that than what's currently written. However, I would be most okay with a solid 6 foot fence if anybody was wondering. Good, better, best, bigger.
So we would suggest a modification to section F 3B that allows for a hybrid construction, which I think actually can be very good with fence. A closed fence up to 4 feet, topped by an open portion of the fence, up to a height of greater than 6 feet.
Just as a question, let's say I do a solid masonry wall with a patchwork masonry for 2 feet above it.
Well, that's what we would require.
One and a quarter, is that the open requirement?
40%.
40%. It's doable. And then it has to be viral. Architects are creative guys. Anything, remember back to my original argument 5 years ago. Anything's possible in that month.
Yeah.
But to your point, we can reach the 40% or use the basic brick.
I mean, I've seen some cool fences that are solid, it's kind of half-work.
Maybe
it's
60 by 60 blocks. So that make that addition to B, does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out how to word this. So where I would like to place it would be... However, an open fence may be constructed at a height no greater than 6 feet or a hybrid fence consisting of 4 foot closed
Top five.
Top five, 40%, okay.
Well, top five, additional, yeah, meeting the open requirement.
Would it be helpful, rather than her trying to create her masterpiece at the podium, to table this for a
That's good.
Can I then do that move that we table this item, the proposed fence code changes, item number six, that we table on the first application?
I'll second.
Okay, any further discussion on that? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
Yes, I
It is a question.
Well, we'll move on. It's Jared's point that I don't think we want to go back and readdress things we've already taken care of. Item B as issued, I think we're coming to a consensus that item B looks good the way you have it proposed, with the exception of the addition of the hybrid version. Mm-hmm. And then I think we're there. So, well, that's where we're at. Yeah. All right, we'll move on to our final item. Review recommendations on amendments to City Code Title 10, Chapter 6 related to landscaping.
So let's start again by background on this. Back in January, staff presented a discussion on commercial and residential landscape requirements. In this discussion, we talked about local scaping, possibly reducing the landscape requirements. 30% for commercial areas, including drought tolerant trees and water conservation methods. This was a discussion item only, no action work code was proposed at this time. Staff is proposing to update the landscaping code for commercial and residential landscape requirements because we want to better align with the state. Utah state goal is to try and reduce water usage by 25%. By the year 2025. Water conservation continues to be an important topic in Utah, and it's the second driest state in the country. This basically is a starting point to our landscaping code, I don't see us passing it tonight, but it gives us a starting point to work with. One of the things that we want to look at is water rights plans and other landscaping materials that would look nice and still be in line with our current design guidelines for commercial and residential landscaping requirements. By including these options and incentives, possible incentives for commercial areas to incorporate these into their yard or their landscape site plans, to be more sustainable, balanced aesthetically, and encourage better option than just an extensive grass areas. Where possible, we want to incorporate drought resistant ground cover, shrubs, trees, and storm water runoff. Again, high water use plants as these grass areas. There are high uses of water, and they should be discouraged. We want to discourage those. Sustainable residential landscaping design is essential, and Localscape's registered design approach can be used to meet the standards and allows homeowners again to have these to be attractive, functional, and water efficient. Possible incentives to incorporate these would be Localscaping. Zero scaping, when plans are submitted to the city, we want to encourage these to incorporate within the plans. Native plans, or they can alternate into their landscaping design as far as plant selection, where they are well suited to the local climate and soil conditions at the project site. We want to encourage both native and locally adapted plans as acceptable plans and have the same similar water needs that they can do those together as much as possible. So a combination of these drought tolerant plants not only help the area to look more pleasing, but throughout the year they bloom at the same time, and it keeps that look that they want to achieve there. So it just gives them a little bit more options. One of the things we want to do is expand our tree and shrub list to include drought tolerant plants. On the table, if you look on the side of the proposal, I've included areas which include what type of drought tolerance they are. Is it high, medium, or low? I think this will help residents when they want to plan or commercial areas to plan to say, this is an incentive if we use this type of a plant and incorporating it. It's more of a mixture that they want to encourage there. Currently, the city requirements, again, are 30% for commercial landscape areas. One of the things that Coast Code indicates, if they were to incorporate such items as fountains, plazas, or splash pads in their site design, City Council, with the recommendation of Planning Commission, may approve an additional 5% reduction in landscape areas requirements for these features when they are designed as a publicly accessible gathering area. But instead of just encouraging public art, which falls at the end of that sentence, could we possibly incorporate it in as well with a 5% reduction in landscape and include other items such as paintings, sculptures, murals, that align in with the architectural theme that they're trying to go with there. Glass or mixed media or work by artisans may include artist works that is integrated into the design. So we don't want a haphazard type look here, but something that's flowing consistent when they submit these site plans. Commercial parking areas. We want to address parking areas, which impacts impervious surfaces and stormwater drainage. When they're combined with drought-tolerant plants or trees, it reduces this area of impervious surfaces and stormwater drainage impacts. And it helps provide shade and mitigate heat and exposure on these surfaces, which also helps to conserve energy. We want to discourage planting just grass and trees in the ground strips. Instead, use a variety of water-wise plants, mulch, drip irrigation, and four hard space.
How about mulch and drip?
You've got mulch spread in like 3 times
bark, lawn clippings, chipped wood, but rocks, materials.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll take out any type of mulch. I apologize. We also want to expand requirements for residential park strip, possibly. The other one is to expand language and items that go towards meeting the requirement to include such amenities that offer active areas such as playgrounds, pathways, not sidewalks. Possible park space areas, corridors, gazebos, benches, decorative rock designs, pavilions, picnic areas. They do have some that have streams and water features that are aesthetically pleasing. These also can be functional in design and look nice as part of the overall project. We also want to encourage to be accessible or directly viewable to the general public. Our goal is not to only expand our plant list, but ultimately, encourage water conservation. This will allow additional options and methods in their landscaping plans, as opposed to being relegated to ancillary structures that suitable for other purposes. Not only do these areas are more aesthetically pleasing, but they are more functionality as a whole in the project. Moving forward, we want developments such as Gateway that are being constructed in phases to still meet the open space requirement on the entire development, but have those additional options as they move forward on these different projects. We understand a lot is made. We did the proposed reduction of 30% of commercial landscaping did not seem to be in favor. But if we could possibly assign percentages to some of these options to go towards the 30% of landscaping, can also help reduce water consumption. In the habitat that was laid out, there is a plant list. There is example of landscaping plans. And these were given by the Central Water Users District. They ultimately follow the same as the Jordan Valley Water District, but they're similar in standards. So, in conclusion, with the statewide infrastructure growing exponentially, and as a city, we want to be able to maintain Utah's water resources, especially when water conservation has become difficult and very expensive. By updating our code, is a step forward with reducing water consumption by providing incentives to our commercial areas to use water rights plants and other landscaping methods and designs. They can still look nice and be in line with our city ordinance guidelines and requirements. The more effort we make today, the less likely we will be faced with restrictions and problems in the future. So staff right now is requesting feedback. Like I say, this is a starting point.
I have one question. What are the incentives? This is commercial. What are the incentives that we're talking about? I don't see any listed incentives.
So one of the incentives would be, and that would be something that we would incorporate into, would be to assign certain percentages to be called out for different types of areas. So, for example, if you have a playground or a fountain that goes out to the mill or something like that, we could assign a percentage and categorize that in and have that go towards the 5% or possibly even increase that 5% above and beyond.
So if we do xeriscaping, then we would have a reduction in open space requirements because it was compliant with the xeriscaping and more water efficient than we have had less open space.
Correct.
Also, there's one thing about hardscape and hard surfaces. I mean, one of the components of weed when you're building a weed facility is that you have permeable surfaces. So you can have concrete that essentially absorbs water and breathes, or you can have geotextile underneath some of what you're doing so that the water stays in the property rather than having to move. So those kinds of things get your points for lead. They're also kind of components in this xeriscaping. So instead of moving and storing water, you're retaining it on the site in a more sustainable way. So I think that's part of this, ability to shrink the open space requirements. If you've got other water management options besides, runoff and storage.
So I want to make sure I have this correct. So, for example, like underneath the gazebo, if they were to use that kind of surface that you're indicating,
or
disperse more evenly and to surrounding areas.
Yeah, parking lots, sidewalks, your walkways, all those things can be there's alternate materials that can be used rather than, you know, straight up concrete or asphalt. And in doing that, if you reduce the need for water management, and also, you know, your plants can be better. So just a thought, if you, you know, if we're really talking about that, you know, ultimate sustainability, managing runoff and storing it versus, you know, site design so you don't have to kind of play with it.
So I do have a question for Chandler.
Sure.
I'm going to defer this to you in a bit. As far as our design standards and what we have that they need to maintain, would there be a conflict?
With
this type of material service?
Well, I don't know that, like, you sparked my interest. I'm looking at a video of permeable concrete right now. It's really interesting.
And they lie too. So you have to make sure you, somebody that's inspecting it knows.
Well, to be honest, I don't know that it'll ever be proposed in Cedar Hills. However, it's not open space. So I don't think that this would comply in any regard with the 30% or whatever percentage it is. I think if anything, it helps to alleviate strain on a storm drain system. That's about it. So if they want to have it, like, so the plan you saw tonight, you saw that you had a retention basin on the west side of the project, right? And that took part of their open space was this retention basin. Well, you've seen other projects where they have the chambers underneath the concrete, right? Well, this could just be a direct connection into a chamber system, and it would open up more ground for open space, but I don't know that it necessarily would go towards an open space calculation, as fascinating as it is.
Well, can I ask a clarifying question? Can I take a step back? What I understood we were addressing tonight was not open space, but landscaping. Is that right? So there are two different things.
But there is an open space or landscaping requirement in commercial areas.
Well, the reason I want to draw a distinction between the two is that if we're talking about landscaping, the current requirement is 30% landscape, and if I read this right, all that's included are areas such as yard space, planter boxes, flower beds, shrubbery beds, other traditional landscape features that qualify towards the landscape requirement. That's, in my mind, traditional landscaping. That's live plantings. What I'm seeing is being proposed is to change our definition of landscape area to include what appears to be a lot of hardscape, which is courtyards, which could be hardscape, gazebos sitting on hardscape benches on hardscape. We say specifically hardscapes, plazas that could be hardscape. We do say down below that at least 50% of the required landscape area shall be live vegetation. So what we're ending up with is half of what is currently in the code based on these revisions, if I'm reading them right. Because we're saying our planted areas can be reduced by 50%, which is really, in terms of landscaping, the only requirement is now 15% instead of 30%, because we're broadening our dimension of definition.
We are broadening it, but again, I'm going to go back to this is just kind of a draft.
No, that's okay. I'm trying to take a step back and say, what are we really saying here? Because then within that landscaping, which really this is more a definition of open space than it is a landscape, and when we start including a lot of hardscape, in my opinion. So I'm trying to clarify, if we're talking about landscaping, our requirement is 30%, then landscaping traditionally includes what is currently in our code. I don't mind adding, like, the water feature sounds like a great idea. Those kinds of things, but it seems like our new definition is so broad that it's not really a definition of landscape. It's really a definition of open space, of which only 50% has to be live plantings. Well, whatever we're using, it just seems like we're really proposing a 50% reduction that what we have traditionally required for development. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think we already made that decision a decade ago. Because we allowed Walmart to have hard surface landscaping at 100%.
Correct.
All the stand concrete and everything on the carbon cost is considered landscaping.
So, stamped concrete and pavers.
Yeah.
That's why you saw the proposal tonight, like they had an area of pavers that would, based on what we've done before, count towards open space.
I don't read that in our code. So was that an exception? Was the code changed?
No, but it's not indicated on that plan that pavers were there, but I mean.
Well, I mean, my quote was like a wall.
It's been changed since Walmart, yes. So this whole section 10.6A has been changed since Walmart.
Since Walmart.
In fact, let me give you more history. It wasn't code when Walmart was adopted. It was simply a separate document that we referred to as the design guidelines. It's since been incorporated into code in order to say this is what you will comply with.
So it would seem that we then stepped in the road code and we require 30% of what is traditional landscape. We defined it as items that are part of a landscaping system, which is, and I don't mind xeriscaping either. I think xeriscaping is actually very nice landscaping, and I don't even mind counting that as part of the 30%, defining what that means to be. Maybe it's only, 10% of the whole thing or whatever, we can work on that. But what I'm seeing in this proposal reduces our landscaping requirement, not our open space, but our landscaping requirement by 50%.
And I'm not saying I don't like that. It doesn't feel good. Different numbers in there. Right, and that's another option maybe that 50% change. Well, my thoughts, yeah, I mean, this is probably, you know, the landscape architecture stuff is one of the more complex things that you can come up with. You've got your plants, you've got the place into your water management, large supply land. They take, you know, these effects of it, and all of this is really complicated. And so we don't want to kind of shortchange one of these, like anything, like turn landscaping into open space, which can then feel lots of hardscape, because then you have these heat islands, right? You know, these places that retain and produce a lot of heat, and even if it's just paper block and concrete and asphalt, even if it's part of the open space, still retains a lot more heat than if you've got, you know, ground with plants on it. Or if you've got glass or rock, then that retains a whole lot more heat. So these then become kind of heat sinks versus a landscape area, which people are not as drawn to. So I'm totally hearing what you're saying. Like, if we're cutting it in half and allowing half of it to be a brick pergola or a fountain or something like that, there's got to be a real offset there, right? Like, we've got to either have some permeability in that hard to see so that we're not managing water off of it or that kind of thing.
I think the main goal that we want to encourage is see these great big lines.
Yeah. Are we going to water those all?
Yeah, how are we going to water?
You
can accomplish this with so much less water by incorporating, different areas, say, for the plant boxes. Well, let's not put plant boxes, let's do curbing and different things and group plants together in different areas.
Yeah, and instead of having a big mulch area, you have a stoned area that, this would be both for potential new development. There's not a lot of big swaths of going to be grass patches in potential new development in the commercial zone. But this could be potentially, let's say the church wanted to redo their landscaping requirement at any of the buildings in the commercial area or something like that, I guess. They could say, we're going to xeriscape this so we get a little less need for landscaping because we're meeting this requirement. Right? This would apply to the existing, so let's say the amp store folks decided to
reduce their landscaping requirement by meeting these standards. That would apply to them as well, right? So this is what we're talking about.
Well, what we want to do is, we don't want to reduce that 30%. We want to increase incentives by allowing other areas to be an included reduction rate by 10% or whatever, if they incorporate these within their landscaping. And I think that that's the goal here, is say if they use streetscaping, would that count towards a reduction, an additional 5%? Or if they incorporate a certain type of water features would be incorporated. This is the direction of trying to...
I guess I'm asking who would this apply to? Who are we targeting?
This would be targeted toward commercial areas.
Just the new development. Not redoing old development.
I think it would have to apply to old development as well.
If they redid their
do something different, they could.
Yes. If, let's say they wanted to expand their building and rip out landscaping and change it in some way, yeah, that could be a result.
I mean, we're still just talking about stuff west of the roundabout, pretty much, so, right? Yes.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to hold my comment.
Is there a rush on this one? It is getting late. Do we want to table this for our next meeting? Want to keep us all here late?
I should take it
since 8 o'clock. No, nothing. I don't want to actually get most of the time. So.
Yeah, and I realize this is just a starting point for me. It's going to move back with other post calls, but I want to get some feedback.
In theory, I'm awesome with zero escaping. I don't want it to look like Las Vegas, but I mean, it's in concept, it's a great idea. Water's going to be more and more scarce as development continues, so it's important. But I just want to make sure that we get the application right. I move that we table this item until next Monday.
I'll say.
All right, any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed?
I'm not going to adjourn.
I will second.
Thank you for your feedback. I appreciate that.
All in favor say aye.
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 All right, thanks everybody. Sorry it's so late.